So much then for prajna. But what about prajna paramita? As I mentioned, prajna is usually translated wisdom. Similarly, prajna paramita is usually translated as perfect wisdom, or even the perfection of wisdom. It's not only a wisdom beyond words. It's even a wisdom beyond wisdom, so to speak. So in what sense is it a wisdom beyond words? In what sense is it a wisdom beyond wisdom? So in order to understand this, we have to know just a little about the history of Buddhism, especially the history of Buddhist doctrine in India. The Buddha attained enlightenment. That's where the story starts. That's where Buddhism starts. Attained enlightenment under the Bodhi tree at Bodhgaya, 2,500 years ago. Attained a state we can't even really imagine. In traditional Buddhist phrase, the Buddha saw things as they really are. And at first, we're told, he doubted if it would be possible for him to communicate his vision to other people. It was so, well, out of this world. So he was inclined to remain silent. He was inclined not to teach. But eventually, as we know, fortunately for us, he decided he would teach. He decided out of compassion. He decided he'd teach for the benefit of those whose eyes were covered with only a little dust. So the Buddha taught. And what he taught was an expression of that enlightenment experience of his. An expression in concepts, images, words. Not that he gave, as it were, a definitive description of his enlightenment experience. He didn't say much about that. He only hinted at it. He only pointed in its direction, saying, so to speak, well, if you go in that direction, you will see what I saw. In fact, the Buddha said that his teaching was like a raft. It was a means to an end. And that just as one used the raft to cross the river and get to the opposite shore, so one used his teaching to cross the flood of samsara and achieve nirvana. His teaching, he said, in fact he insisted, was not an end in itself. It was only a means to an end. It was only a finger pointing to the moon. One shouldn't mistake the finger for the moon. Look at the finger, yes, but then, from the finger, look at the moon. But as time passed, as the Buddha himself passed away, as the generations passed, as one generation of disciples was succeeded by another, some of those disciples, some of those later followers, didn't do what the Buddha had asked them to do. They didn't look from the finger to the moon. They fastened their attention on the finger, so to speak. They mistook, in fact, the finger for the moon. Changing the metaphor, we may even say that they made themselves at home on the raft, forgetting to use it to cross the flood. And this was particularly the case with regard to what we may describe as the more doctrinal part of the raft. The Buddha himself had given only hints, but in the course of centuries, those hints hardened for some people into certainties, even into dogmas, hardened into elaborate doctrinal systems, elaborate doctrinal structures. Especially was this the case with what we know as the Abhidharma. The Abhidharma came to be regarded as literally embodying absolute truth. Is still so regarded in some Buddhist countries. But not all Buddhists agreed that the Abhidharma literally embodied absolute truth. Not all Buddhists agreed that Prajna and Abhidharma were identical. And some of these Buddhists produced a literature of their own. A literature that went beyond Prajna in the Abhidharma sense. A literature that went beyond literalism. That went, we may say that in fact fought literalism, tooth and nail. And this was the literature of the Prajna Paramita tradition. This literature was produced over a period of several hundred years, and it eventually comprised about 35 independent texts. And some of these texts were and are very extensive indeed. But large or small, they're all known as sutras. They all purport to be discourses delivered by the Buddha himself. But we may say that the Prajna Paramita sutras are not sutras in the sense of being discourses actually given by the historical Buddha and then written down exactly as he gave them. Their particular emphasis, however, especially their anti-literalism, does go back to the Buddha himself and the Buddha's own teaching. These Prajna Paramita sutras are faithful to the spirit of the Buddha's teaching. Perhaps the best known of the Prajna Paramita sutras is the Vajracchedika, or Diamond Cutter Sutra, generally known simply as the Diamond Sutra. Then there is the Heart Sutra. There's the Prajna Paramita Sutra in 8,000 lines. There's one in 25,000 lines. There's one in 100,000 lines. That's the biggest of them all. And this vast literature, consisting of many, many volumes, has been translated in its entirety into English by the late Dr. Edward Conza, so that all of us should be very grateful to him. This literature, this Prajna Paramita Sutra literature, is not available in its entirety in any other Western language. Gratitude is very much a Buddhist virtue. It may surprise you to learn that even the Buddhas feel gratitude. The Prajna Paramita Sutra in 8,000 lines says, they, i.e. the Tathagatas or Buddhas, treat the Dharma with respect, revere, worship and adore it, for they know that this essential nature of Dharmas is just the perfection of wisdom. For the all knowledge of the Tathagatas has been brought about from this perfection of wisdom, and for that the Tathagatas are grateful and thankful to her. With justice can the Tathagata be called grateful and thankful. In gratitude and thankfulness the Tathagata favours and cherishes the vehicle on which he has come and the path by which he has won full enlightenment. That one should know as the gratitude and thankfulness of the Tathagata. So if the Buddha is grateful to the perfection of wisdom, how much more grateful we should be, not just to the perfection of wisdom, but to the Buddha himself. We should in fact be grateful to all our spiritual friends, grateful to all who have brought us into contact with the Dharma, or helped us to deepen our contact with it, our understanding of it. We should be grateful to all our centres and communities, grateful for our seminars and retreats, grateful for our study groups, grateful for our team-based right livelihood businesses, grateful to the writers and translators of books on Buddhism, including Dr. Conza, the translator of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. Gratitude, we may say, is one of the greatest virtues. But nowadays, it is a virtue that is sadly neglected. Sometimes, in fact, I think that people are ashamed to feel gratitude or to express it. Gratitude is for something you receive, something you've been given, something you perhaps didn't deserve, or at least which you feel you didn't deserve. But if you receive from another person, you are in a sense inferior to that person. You're on the receiving end, and people don't like to feel inferior, and therefore they often have difficulty with the idea of gratitude. They have difficulty with the idea of gratitude in much the same way and for much the same reasons that they have difficulty with the idea of spiritual hierarchy. When I first came into contact with Buddhism in 1942, it's more than a half a century ago, Dr. Konza had only just started translating the Perfection of Wisdom literature. There was, however, an English translation of a Chinese version of the Daoman Sutra. When I read this, it made a tremendous impression on me, as did the Platform Scripture, or Sutra of Huailang, or Huining, which I read at about the same time. Reading these two works, these two texts, I realized I was a Buddhist, and in fact, had always been one. I've therefore always felt intensely grateful to the translators of these two works. That is to say, to William Gemmell, the translator of the Daoman Sutra, and Wong Mao Lam, the translator of the Platform Scripture, the Sutra of Huailang. And this is why, when I published The Eternal Legacy, I dedicated that book to their memory.